The tools that they were using were copper and bronze tools and pounding stones. So to get this perfect joinery puzzle, fitted pieces together, it just wasn't something that even the Spanish could believe could be done with the tools that the Inca had at the time.
So many things that we could talk about today, but I thought maybe a good place to start would be to highlight the book that you wrote, and I believe was published almost a year ago, back in 2024, entitled Sorcerers of Stone, Architects of the Three Ages. So I thought maybe you could just talk a little bit about why you chose that title, because I think that feeds into a lot of what we could talk about today.
Well, basically, the title came from basically there were chroniclers here during the Spanish conquest. And basically, when they looked at places like Tiwanaku and Sacsayhuaman, they basically didn't understand how it was created. And it was Garcia Losa de la Vega who said there was some type of sorcery that produced the giant stones that one sees at Sacsayhuaman. And they didn't know how the locals could have created that. So they basically thought, well, they must be either accessing witchcraft or some sort of sorcery to build these stones. So, but the chroniclers also weren't quite aware that there were other stories about ancient civilizations before the Inca. They tended to ascribe most of these works to Inca building, and even though locals had said, it wasn't the Inca that were, in Tiwanaku. They said, it is passed down through oral tradition that there was some civilization here way before the Inca that built these things. So that's pretty much where the title for the book came about, Sorcerers of Stone.
For someone who's not familiar with this ancient stonework masonry, or maybe they've seen Machu Picchu, can you describe the stonework that the Spaniards saw and ascribed to sorcery, or could not? They were astonished by its, its size and scope. Can you talk about what does that look like? What do you mean by that?
Well, I believe for the most part, like the Spanish were looking at the megalithic style. So when you go to Sacsayhuaman, this is what most of the tourists are actually looking at. They usually take a trip called the city tour, and that takes them to a few sites. And the cream of the crop site is basically what they call the citadel and the citadel wall, and or walls, because there's actually three of them. And here you see gigantic stonework that is perfectly fitted. So the joinery just fits in like puzzle pieces, and frequently the stones are 100 tons to 200 tons. There's even some who have said some of the cornerstones are 300 tons. So what the Spanish were looking at when they were looking at the Inca is a civilization that still didn't have a wheel. They didn't have like massive hoist to pull the rocks up to some of the heights that some of these stones are positioned in. And also the tools that they were using were copper and bronze tools and pounding stones. So to get this perfect joinery puzzle, fitted pieces together, it just wasn't something that even the Spanish could believe could be done with the tools that the Inca had at the time. So that is one particular style, the megalithic style. Then there's an earlier style, which is called the Hanampacha. So this is basically instead of like megalithic where stones are fitted together, the monolithic is just one gigantic stone. And this is one of some of the features that you see all over Sacsayhuaman. And there's very little known about this earlier style. And when you're walking into these sites and the areas where they have this Hanumpacha, it's really kind of alien and quite surreal and magical, but it doesn't look like anything we come to recognize as architecture, and that we know it today. It's just so bizarre and so surreal. And here, so you have this Hanumpacha style, this early style, then you have the megalithic style, and then you'll find other more recent cultures like the Inca, the Quilque, and the Wari. Those are the third style, and sometimes you'll see them one on top of each other. So they're built exactly on top of each other, which is a very interesting feature because still the guides and most of the archaeologists will say everything was built by, the Inca. Sometimes they'll say the Quilque, might have built these walls for the citadel walls, but typically the Quilque used small stones and very rough stones. They weren't known for builders of megalithic polygonal, kinds of constructions. The main reason they believe that is because they found some pottery, Quilca pottery that were around these gigantic walls. But any culture that drops artifacts along the way sometimes gets attributed as the builders of these sites, which is kind of an erroneous assumption, I would say.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, it really establishes that someone was there at that time, but it doesn't necessarily put the parameters on the earliest inhabitation or, yeah, exactly. And the radiocarbon dating is dating organic material and not stone. And I don't know if you know how much has any research been done to get underneath or behind the stones to, I mean, they're so huge. I don't know if there's been any carbon dating around that. I'm getting kind of ahead of myself, but I don't know if you're familiar with anything.
They had Russian scientists that came in 2012. And they were doing work to kind of figure out, Sacsayhuaman at that time was seeing like a lot of damage and a lot of water seepage was going through the terrace systems, and some of the rocks were like toppling. And so they were brought over by the Ministry of Culture, Peru, to come and analyze the site to see what the problems were. So the Russians used a lot of ground penetrating radar. They eventually took samples also back to Russia. As far as I know, there were no, nothing carbon dating related that they could analyze, but they did see some anomalous problems with the official story and the stone. Basically, when they looked in electron microscopes, they could see that the interior of the rock had a very consistent matrix, and it didn't have the fossils that one normally finds in quarry limestone. It was one of the scientists, Andrei Veronov, who basically said, it looks like this stone was taken from the quarry because it has a similar chemistry to the quarry rock, but it was pulverized and reconstituted as a geopolymer. When they presented their case to the Peruvian government, there were a couple geologists and scientists there who kind of poo-pooed this data. But they didn't really continue on with more research to establish if this was really a geopolymer. There's been studies by Dr. Joseph Davidowitz in Tiwanaku. He has found organic matter in the andesite stone in Pumapunku, which is in Bolivia. And he says, andesite is a volcanic rock, so you really shouldn't have any organic matter in volcanic rocks. So He basically said, and by looking at the stones where you can see really tight 90-degree angles, this looks like it was placed in a mold and at one time was a softer constitution. So, which it seemed to indicate that it was a geopolymer.
That's
So.
fascinating. And so Sacsayhuaman is mostly, it's limestone. A lot of the buildings around Cusco are andesite, right? Andesite block, andesitic
Yes.
blocks. Wow, I'd never heard that before. That's fascinating. The Russian ex or the investigation that you mentioned, is that, I think there's a YouTube video that documents that. I'm not sure if it's the same one, but I have seen that, and that is fascinating. Okay, well, I want to get into some of those different sites. Before I do, I want to go back to your book title very quickly and just talk about the second, the subtitle of your book, Architects of the Three Ages. And you just described three different styles of architecture or use of masonry that you see in Peru and has been found other places as well. You call those Hanan Pacha, Uran Pacha, and Ukum Pacha. And I've been looking at this stuff for a long time. I'd never come across those terms for the three styles of masonry. I'm familiar with the mythic Hanan, Uku, and Kai Pacha domains of Inca mythology. Is that something that you came up with, or where did that come from?
That actually came from a gentleman called Alfredo Gamarra, and he was a Cusqueño. He lived here for all his life, and he spent a great deal of time investigating all of the architecture and the sites around Sacsayhuaman and other locations as well. He tended to believe like the earliest architectural style, Hanan Pacha, was part of like the golden age here of and it wasn't just in Peru, it was in other parts of the world as well, because you can find very similar types of constructions in China, Japan, Greece, and especially with the megalithic style, which he had termed heaven below. And he basically meant for the megalithic style, this heaven below, that this was on the surface. And he had the Uku Pacha, which was the third style, which was more heaven inside, kind of interesting terms. And I just decided to use it because I'm living here in Cusco. But some people have they don't like to use that because it is seen all around the world. So they'll use first civilization, second civilization, and third civilization, and sometimes mother civilization for the oldest style. Yeah, that's where those terms come from. And his son Jesus also is doing work to promote these theories as well. Yeah, they tended some of the theories got positioned as like when the earth was at a different stage of evolution, and that's when this early civilization started. And this was what Jesus and Jean-Peter de Jong, who was a colleague of Jesus Gamarra, have they've created a theory that the earth was at one time smaller and had less gravity, and this allowed for the early humanity to be able to manipulate rock quite easily. And it is really interesting because when you look at this earlier Hanan Pacha rock, you can see fingerprints in the rock molding canals, ledges. I have countless pictures where you can see fingerprints and how somebody was actually molding it as it was soft. But this isn't like a official archaeology. This isn't this isn't what mainstream archaeologists believe is true. They will say it's acid rain that created these grooves. But the thing is, you can see such precision and such you'll see rocks that have these grooves, and they're right next to a very smooth 90-degree angle with hardly any damage to it. So I don't know how acid rain could be so discriminatory towards one rock and not another.
Yeah, the differential weathering argument I wouldn't think would hold up there if they're the same types of rock. And also, I think it's actually Waman. There's like a serpent and other figures that almost look like they're carved or impressed into the stone, right?
And you frequently don't see any tool marks in this older stuff. I mean, it just looks like somebody, had trowels and pushed into, the mass of the mold but you can see canals being formed. You can see zigzags being formed. Though many people like to say, well, limestone is a very soft stone, and they could work on it that way. It is what you find in Sacsayhuaman is a metamorphosed stone. So it's extremely hard, at least it is today. Perhaps when it was first being created, it was soft, and over time it had congealed into this hardness. So very hard to break it. And I've walked all over these things, and I don't think I've ever broken rock out of walking on these things. So so to if it was acid rain that was the issue, why are some of them just perfectly smooth 90 degrees and some of them have holes all over them? But these holes also look formed, they look smooth inside, and like somebody played with them like clay. Very, very interesting.
So the conventional explanation that you've heard is that this is from erosion. Have you heard of any other explanations that are offered up by traditional archaeologists?
Well, there's erosion, and some people like to theorize that there was some kind of catastrophe in the past that caused some of these structures to, some of them look like they could have been flipped over. There's a rock in Sacsayhuaman behind the Rodadero, which is this volcanic mound. And most people think it was flipped over by some catastrophe, but I don't tend to believe that. I see these niches and these alcoves are almost always situated right at ground level. And I believe whoever was using these niches, they were using them for energy purposes and telluric currents, and these alcoves were holding that energy. So, and you can see it everywhere around in the back of Sacsayhuaman, how the alcoves are right at ground level. And then they have a tendency to see, they're right on water sources as well. So streams, natural springs. So the rock is actually getting kind of a charge from natural currents in the earth. And also with the water as well. So, I think a lot more work needs to be done on what kind of earth energies are happening here and how they're affecting us, how they're affecting the people that use these sites. So,
That's a bizarre landscape over on the other side of Sacsayhuaman, where, as you just mentioned, you've got those almost chutes or grooves in the stone, the Rodadero, and then you have the up overturned stairs, and then there's that big circular area, and it looks like thrones or just randomly positioned blocks. Do you have any, what's your understanding of that area? I mean, you kind of touched on the energy uses. Do you have any? Because there's a lot of precision cuts over there in the rock as well, right?
So that's the area they kind of call like the well, they believed it was like an aqueduct, but it seems a little odd. This is called the Kochi Chinkana. And they've recently found through the Russian data who were using ground penetrating radar, they found cave systems under here. And there were three vertical shafts. I think they go down to 40 meters. So it would seem strange if you would have, if this was an aqueduct, that you would have these tunnels going down for 40 meters. I mean, maybe the water was percolating down into Cusco, and but then they also found some more surface shafts, which were not quite as deep, and they were going more horizontal. And the Russians also, this was Andrei Voronov, he also said these are not natural, so these were created by some humanity or something. And it doesn't seem like it was, designed to hold water. So what was that for? I mean, that whole area. And it's rather large circular enclosure, almost like an amphitheater. So they need to do, more work on this to understand what its purpose was. But there's so many mysteries in the back there, and as far as what were the original uses, of these places. So but he, even here around this Kocha-Chinkana, you'll find a lot of Hanampacha stones, and if there's one stone kind of in the west side of the Kocha-Chinkana, and it looks like a spaceship, and it has all these kind of seats and niches. There's like snake-like formations on the side of it, various grooves that look like it was smoothly shaped into the stone. And then typically what you see, it's like when the megalithic people came there, they recognized this particular area as being spiritual. Maybe their ancestors were there. And so they ended up building around these Hanampacha with the megalithic stuff. And I think, Peru probably has more fantastic examples of this particular overbuilding from one culture to another culture or civilization. And that's what makes it so fascinating to be here and just see this magical place. So, yeah.
I was going to ask you about your favorite sites and why those intrigue you. Since we're talking about sexy woman or sexy woman, I have it in my head to call it sexy woman. I don't know if I can adjust. That may be incorrect, but it's just
Yeah.
it's what's stuck in my head. But
Most people say sexy woman.
what is it? If you can even expand into that, you have these crenellated walls with megalithic stonework. The Spaniards thought, I think, that this was more of a fortress or a citadel.
Right.
There were structures when the Spaniards arrived. We're not really sure. Maybe they were wooden structures. They're not there anymore, right? But we have patterns that you can see from a bird's eye view that indicate something was there up on top of those terraced
Right.
walls.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Or what have your discoveries or your investigations turned up around that?
Right. Well, there were three towers. There's actually a plateau, and then you have the three terraced walls that go from this plateau. And they knew there was like, and this was written by the chroniclers and Garcilaso de la Vega, who was like a mix of Inca and Spanish, but they definitely wrote about a big round tower which was on the west side, and then they had two smaller rectangular towers more to the east. What we do know about it, and what not archaeologists, but actually architects did a study of this complex, and they discover there were natural springs that were percolating underneath and flowing into this tower system. And if you look at that circular region right now, you'll see all these canals that bring the water into this three-ring concentrical circular tower. And It's not 100% clear exactly what was going on, but I have a theory that perhaps with the zigzag walls that were coming off of this tower system, it was perhaps charging the water with the sun. Water was flowing down in these rocks that have a lot of quartz and calcite. And when you tend to have a zigzag, it ends up charging water in a particular way. There was an Egyptian wisdom keeper who describes this is the exact same thing that they have going on in Egypt, and it's going on underneath the pyramid. He said when he was a child, he would explore down the Gaza Plateau, and they'd find all kinds of zigzag canals which were underneath the pyramids. And he said this was a way to create impulsive energy as opposed to explosive energy. So it would actually have a charge, a subtle energy component that may have been used for the people of Cusco. If the towers were interacting with the sun, the water, the quartz in the rock, it might have been charging this energy to produce some subtle energies that could maybe help grow food in the environment. Also benefited the people by having charged water in their systems. So, yeah, I like that theory.
That is so interesting. It just seems like there's just so much that we don't know. Water was a key feature in lots of ancient sites, as you pointed out, including Inca sites where they created camé or water energy. But yeah, it's just so. What are the conventional archaeological explanations of Sacsayhuamán? What do they view that as a fort? Was it a, do they address any of these observations that you've shared?
I mean, it was a fort actually during the Inca time, and they were using it. They had, and there were eyewitness accounts that they had battalions up there. And this was particularly in the time of the conquest. So the Spanish were trying to take over Cusco, and there was holdouts, and the Inca were fighting back and forth, trying to keep the Spaniards from taking Cusco. And one of the last battles was actually at Sacsayhuaman. And so they were using the walls as barricades. There were also stories that the Inca would have fled in the underground subterranean cave systems, which are all over in this particular area. So, during the Inca times, which was like 1433 to 1538, basically they did start using this as a fort. But I do think it was actually built beforehand and probably not used as one when it was originally constructed.
Yeah,
But
that's kind of a theme across this, isn't it? It's a repurposing of these sites potentially by Incas. I've read that Sacsayhuaman might have been used as a kind of a gateway to the east, to Antasuyu and the tribes over there to protect Cusco. But yeah, that's fascinating. In 1536, and it was actually where Juan Pizarro was killed when they led that charge against the Incas that were defending Sacsayhuaman. So, and it makes you wonder, or at least I wonder, how much of those, obviously those towers are no longer there. What was there before the Incas? Were those original structures? I guess maybe we'll never know.
We don't know 100% what happened, and because the Inca didn't have a writing or one that we know of, they did use a system called the quipu, which was, they could record like, how much wool was sold and, one community or, do accounting, for the Inca and related functionaries that ran the Cusco, or the Inca civilization. But, Unfortunately, yeah, we don't know how the original structures were designed and what they were used for. And it seems like there's kind of a block when it comes to archaeology here to go into those areas as kind of like pseudo archaeology. And it seems to me like there's a whole marketing that the Inca, created this, and they this was a fortress. We don't want to go anywhere into the past where we can, think of more exotic themes of how it was created. So it's up
Yeah.
to like independent researchers and archaeologists to kind of come up with some other theories that are more plausible, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we've had to draw on a lot of myths to try to interpret that. One thing that always I try to keep in the back of my mind when thinking about those sites is how much or how little is left that was original. That great last battle that you talked about in 1536, I think something like 90% of Cusco was destroyed. And then in the years that followed, the Spaniards took much of the stonework from Sacsayhuaman and so many other places to build the basilica and other buildings there in Cusco. So, I mean, when we look at Cusco today, what are we looking at that is original? But it sounds like maybe that Hanan Pacha is at least a good starting point, those huge ancient foundations that I guess the Spaniards maybe left in place because they were too heavy to move.
Well, the thing with the monoliths, they really couldn't move them. They can move some of the smaller megalithic stuff, and then there was a lot of it still was pretty impressive stonework, which was on top of the citadel fortress, but they were much smaller blocks, and those were the ones that were used to really build the aristocracy's homes in Cusco. But they let, fortunately, the early builders of the megalithic stuff built in such sizes that were impossible to move. And then the Hanan Pacha, they just left untouched, except some people believe that the Spanish were going in there. If they'd find a figurine on the Hanan Pacha stuff, they would break off the face and chip it off because they still the people believed in their huacas, and their huacas are spiritual sites, and so the locals would frequently visit these even at the time of the Spanish. And the Spanish clergy at the time really wanted to crack down on this because they really wanted to impose Christian, Catholicism on the people. So it was forbidden to actually visit these huacas on penalty of death, and then they did try to deface them as much as possible. Kind of a sad reality that Spanish did not recognize that these things were basically God is in everything, and even in these huacas. They were worshiping earth elements, currents, and trees and water sources. And Andean cosmology also says, it's all God, it's all source. So, the Spanish have very delineated ideas on who you could worship and how.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they burned or destroyed so many of the so-called devil strings or the quipus. So there are very few of those left. And then they built their churches on top of the previous sites, like the Coricancha. So that makes it, it's almost as if they were covering up, what the old ways of thinking or believing. Are there other sites other than Sacsayhuaman that really grab your interest or focus, maybe where you like to take your tour clients, or maybe something that just draws you back, as far as your independent research goes?
I mean, fortunately, where I live, there's so many different and fascinating sites. I'd say like My favorites are like quarter concha, well, quarter concha, chinchero, which is a site kind of high, it's kind of midway between Cusco and Ollantaytambo. And all of these sites have really fantastic stonework masonry that is exemplar. But I'm particularly fascinated with the early stuff, just because there's we're still like reaching for straws to try and figure out what is this, but it has such an air of magic and mystery to it. But I find the shapes beautiful. So you'll frequently find these monoliths with these niches and seats, and some of them are like perfectly rounded, some are like rectilinear. Some have canals where water would flow down and people would sit underneath them in these seats. So I'd love to find out how these were used in the past. I kind of get an idea of how they're used today, because you can feel that these sites are like on energy power spots. You can go into a few of them and they look like beehives, and you can walk into these alcoves and you can see this is where people are putting offerings. So they put quintus, they put flowers, fruits, and you can feel a particular energy in these sites, like the electrons are like buzzing around you. I've frequently come out of them and my legs are shaking, but it's just like I feel like I've been transformed in somehow. So it'd be great if we had more people who understand like the earth energies and have the machines to measure what's going on in these sites.
Yeah, it seems like if they were formed or created or the sites were chosen for mystical or spiritual or energetic reasons, then adopting a similar mindset to understand them would be important. You know, if you just look at them conventionally or according to our history, you're only going to get a little piece of their real true meaning. Since you brought up alcoves, I'm kind of bouncing around a little bit, but the niches that are found that are, pervasive in, I should say, Andean architecture. What kind of ideas do you have around that? I mean, they're often suggested that they were shrines or that they put mummies in there or offerings or those kinds of things. Are there any other hypotheses that you've come across?
One of the things I'm exploring right now is biogeometry and how these forms might how they would hold energy, because that's one of the focuses on biogeometry, is like how shape holds a particular vibration and quality. And so if people were like sitting on these rocks, and some of them are circular and some of them are rectangular, others are more square-like, how are these rocks and these shapes like affecting the human, as far as our physiology or psychology, and I do have a friend coming over next month, and she is an advanced practitioner of biogeometry. We're hoping to do a little research to see what these wakas are actually telling us was their purpose. Also, how do these water sources and telluric currents that are working, underneath these wakas, how are they harnessing the electromagnetic energy of these wakas? So, that's just like a start. I mean, I'm hoping more people, this might raise more interest in doing this kind of work, because this is, I think, where we need to be going to understand what these sites are all about. How were they being used as oracles, as places of healing, places of perhaps shamanic journeys and raising consciousness. So, but we do know that the priests would from the Inca would go to these sites and use them as oracles, and they were They also had community members come there and are frequently giving offerings. So there was something going on that was quite magical and different than normal types of building, like for houses and stuff. These were harnessing certain energies and frequencies.
Yeah, absolutely. And their orientations geocosmically and the niches, as you pointed out, they're, the trapezoidal ones, some of them go, they're almost at right angles going back into the wall. But there was a site that I came across. I can't remember the name of it. It was down south of Cusco, and it's a trapezoidal, it's a building with trapezoidal niches, but the back of the niches, it goes into three sides. So it's not four-sided. It's three, kind of goes down into a three-dimensional triangle, a three-sided. It's hard for me to explain, but that had to be intentional. There must have been some reason for that. You don't just accidentally build that, just like you don't accidentally create these massive megalithic buildings when a simple wall might have sufficed. So that is really intriguing. And I think for the layperson who's watching this, the conventional story about the Incas, right, is that they moved into the valley somewhere between 1200, 1330, 1400, something like that. And that was their ninth Sapa Inca Pachacutec, who in the early 1400s just launched this tribe into kingdom status and ordered all of this stuff to be built. And it was all done within something like, 50, 60, 70 years. And then the Spaniards showed up, right?
So that's the conventional narrative. Pachacuti basically started this whole building complex and empire building. But we're talking about a very short amount of time, between the time they started their building projects and the Spanish coming. So what we're told is places like Machu Picchu, Sacsayhuaman, Ollantaytambo, various, I mean, there's sites everywhere around Peru, were all created in this short time span, which doesn't really hold water for me because the Inca were still having in their in the process of conquest, they were still fighting tribes like all over from Ecuador to Bolivia to Colombia in order to make this empire. To have all this manpower and all this incredible skill necessary to build all of these sites just doesn't seem possible in the short amount of time, before the Spanish came. And this is where I believe it is part of a marketing campaign, by the government of Peru to really promote the Inca as the progenitors of all of the sites that we see, except when you start talking about like the coast, where you obviously have different cultures like the Chavín and the Mochi, and there are other cultures here that built incredible things as well, but usually they didn't build in stone like in when you go to the coast, most of it is adobe and sand, and a lot of it is in ruins today. So who were these megalith builders and monolith builders? They seem to be way before these other groups in the Wari and the Kilke. So
Yeah.
still lots to just to research and discover, but it seems like today more and more people are beginning to understand that there is a much much more ancient civilization that was here in the past, and now we're discovering similar types of constructions that are all over the world. So how can we see so many similar constructions, all over the world if it wasn't for a worldwide seafaring, perhaps, civilization that was creating these sites?
Yeah, the stonework similarities, and then something that's jumped out to a lot of people, I think, who have looked at some of these pictures are the protrusions or the nubs that are found on stones in Egypt and lots of other places, I think in Greece as well. Supposedly, these are civilizations that did not have contact with each other, but it seems like kind of a it's not a usual characteristic of rock to have these stone nubs, and yet they're found all over the place.
You can see them in China, Yangtze, where these gigantic, I believe they're limestone, but you see the same niches. And you know, why are they in China if this was supposed to be created by the Inca? You know, all these same niches, nubs, the look like it was created by hand, you know. And then when you go into the megalithic stuff, you'll see the same cellular, natural cellular polygonal stones fitted together all over. So it seems like they were sharing knowledge and technology, and it was going across continents and across the ocean. So today we're discovering in Egypt there's weird, there's evidence of an advanced technology. We still need to do a lot more research. Have you heard about the columns underneath the Giza pyramid?
I have.
So, it's not 100% clear exactly what's going on, but some of these images look like there was energy that's flowing back and forth between the pyramid and underground system, 648 meters below the ground. So this is why, we should explore the idea that there were ancient civilizations before our more recent civilizations, that we are told built all of these incredible sites and pyramids and stuff like that.
I want to ask you something, and I don't want to go there if it's uncomfortable or if it's controversial, but have you had, since you've been there for 5 years, have you had many interactions with traditional archaeologists? Have you had conversations around this? I'm always curious about the back and forth between, alternative historians and the more conventional approach. Have you had any interactions or perspectives that you wanted to share?
I think the ones the archaeologists that are here who have kind of established careers, and they tend to be more conservative, and they will, they basically will follow in line and say, these are examples of Inca construction. And one of the more interesting theories I heard for these three different styles that one sees in Sexy Woman is that when the empire was being built, the Inca would bring in conquered people to come and build their constructions, and they would take them from their native homeland and bring them all around the world, and specifically in the Cusco region. So one of the theories for Hanampacha was this was a different group of people from another part of Peru that were brought in by the Inca to build this Hanampacha work. Still doesn't explain how they did it, because it's
Well, and I think that those are Coyas, right, from the south, that were brought in from the Tiwanaku area,
yeah,
I
exactly,
think.
like the Quilap area and Chachapoyas, and but I've never seen up there. I mean, there is on Quilap, there is an underground Hanampacha foundation, which is really interesting because I don't think anybody wrote about it, but I kind of just, when I was up there like a year and a half ago, I discovered all this Hanampacha even up there. So the question is why would the Chachapoyans, start with one style and then build on top of that? So that was one of the theories I heard from a graduate from the guide school here in Cusco. He was like, well, that's why we have these three different styles, because they were just grabbing people from different parts of Peru and bringing them in. And but it doesn't explain, well, okay, well, why do you have overbuilding? Why did the megalithic builders built on top of this Hanampacha, and then the Inca built on top of that. So it would seem to me a little kind of bizarre way to construct your buildings.
Something that's really interesting or seems curious to me is to bring in Tiwanaku workers. Well, Tiwanaku is thought to have basically ceased to exist around, I'd see different numbers, but maybe 400 AD, 800 AD. Say it was 800 AD. That's still 400 to 500 years difference. So to carry that stone building knowledge across 5 centuries, and not create anything during that time seems, it just seems odd, you know, that that knowledge would be passed over 5 centuries of a people and then sort of brought to life again to build this the things you see in Cusco.
That is and I've heard that theory as well, but it doesn't, I agree. It just doesn't make any sense. And the Tiwanakans were they were fabulous pottery creators, and but they weren't really known as huge megalith builders. And I guess this theory is coming from the fact that you have Tiwanaku, which is this massive, completely destroyed site today. But they still have these like 100-ton pieces of andesite and sandstone that are littered everywhere around there. And archaeology is saying, well, these Tiwanakans built that. But the Tiwanakans said, no, this was, during the Spanish Chronicalistas, they were saying, no, that they don't know who built that. That was way before the Inca, and they have no idea who came before, who built these things. I think it's trying to fit archaeology into a historical narrative that is convenient right now for the people who are running the narrative of how these things were built. But it's for a lot of people really examining this, it's not ringing true. And it's you can see it with your own eyes that this couldn't have possibly been done by the people at that time who didn't, unless they had some magical abilities, So it's kind of a puzzle here, and trying to piece it all together in a logical, coherent manner is it's still a struggle. But I think a lot of the new researchers are beginning to explore that there was evidence of an advanced civilization, and we just don't know who it was, who was here, who built these things.
That stonework in Tiwanaku is mind-blowing. I mean, those H-shaped blocks that look like they were precast concrete. I mean, the right angles, and I mean, it looks like it was cut with a laser saw or something like that. Do you view those that work as is that Hanan Pacha or is that Uran Pacha or how do you categorize that?
That's a good question. I would say that's kind of more megalithic style, though it doesn't completely match what you see at Sacsayhuaman, because at Sacsayhuaman, it seems a little more organic. The rocks are more bulbous. They look like cellular structure in animals, on the skin. But Tiwanaku is very angular, very precise. The surfaces are very polished and very flat. And the 90-degree angles and chicanas that are formed in them are really kind of perfectly carved, and which looks quite a bit different than Sacsayhuaman. So it does look like it was some different civilization that created that.
I know
And
there
that's
have been some recent demonstrations of kind of recreating the smaller stones using like taking one rock and hammering it against another rock. To your knowledge, have there been any recreations of the type of stonework seen at Sacsayhuaman or the precision, almost industrial scale
Scale,
work
right.
done at Tiwanaku using the tools believed to have been available to the Incas? Has there been any success in in demonstrating that?
I think I do remember there was a video, but I think this was more Sacsayhuaman. I don't think it was in Tiwanaku. And he was creating trying to create the joints of like the geopolymer work. And he had limited success, but it took a very long time for him to create like these smaller versions, not these 200 ton rocks. I don't think anybody's ever done that. They're all much smaller versions when people try to create it, but you still don't have like the joinery where the lip fits perfectly in with an adjoining rock. You don't see that. That kind of precision, using the tools that they had, would take forever, basically, to create. And as this guy said, it was a huge amount of work and took him a lot of time. And a lot of the historical narratives say that Sacsayhuaman and Tiwanaku were built overnight. So what civilization could do that? So so yeah, they're that doesn't quite none of the reproductions of trying what I've seen online are at scale, to the original constructions, nor are they as perfect and clean for their masonry work. So whoever were building these things were like master masons. Yeah, so.
I want to be respectful of your time. I could talk with you all day about this, but I did have a couple questions about myths. You had brought those up. You mentioned those in your book and on your website as a way of kind of understanding and putting into context some of these sites that have limited remains today. So we have to kind of piece it together through, some different ways of thinking. There's a couple of different schools of thought, it seems like, around the myths of the Incas. Some people say that they were historical. Some people say they were more, metaphorical. Some people say that the Incas embellished their own history when they talked to the Spanish chroniclers. Others feel like Bill Sullivan, in his book, he mentions that they were trying to pass along this knowledge to the Spaniards. But we also know that probably in the Andes, as well as in other places on Earth, civilizations, when they came to power, just obliterated past myths and any sort of memory of the past, and sort of recreated the world as it was, in their time. And that's what they passed along. So that's a long, I'm sorry for talking so long. What are your thoughts about Inca myths? How valuable are they to understanding what we're seeing in Peru? Where do you put kind of some stops on what you'll accept? Kind of, what do you think about that?
Yeah, as Garcia Losa de la Vega, now a lot of people have looked at his writings, and he was particularly proud of his Inca heritage, and understandably, it was a great empire, and they were great road builders. They were great, they made these amazing aqueduct systems, and they actually had, as far as civilizations go, probably one of the most benign. And I mean, it was the Inca were all powerful, of course, but they weren't as despotic and cruel as various other civilizations. So they really had a civilization, I think, that was beneficial to all of their citizenry. But as far as like legends go, there was There was a belief that Pachacuti could actually move stone through his will and using magical devices, but it's unclear, if this is just to justify the stonework that one sees as Sacsayhuaman. And but part of this legend, this myth, is that they actually could throw these giant stones and destroy their enemies. Well, if that's the case, why didn't they do this when the Spanish came, or was it only one person, Pachacuti, who could do that? So what happened to this lost knowledge where you could move the stones and with magic and throw them? So I think those are that's these are part of the myths to explain these incongruities of what one sees around this area. Another one was like the Gran Chincana is this giant stone, which they also call the tired stone, and that's in the back of Sacsayhuaman. And so the one of the myths was that the Inca were carrying this with thousands of men, and then the stone said, "Sorry, I'm tired. I'm going to just collapse here." So that was one of these reasons to explain how this stone ended up where it was in the back of the Rotodera in Sacsayhuaman. So, yeah, I mean,
Is it kind of like the tired stone at Baalbek?
I think so. You try to explain things that weren't plausible, and but you also want to inflate the dominant culture at the time and maybe support the magic of the magic thinking that the Incas had these powers, to move these stones. So there's other places like Sawiti, which are closer to Abancay, where there's this beautiful stone and it has all of these shapes on it. It has animals on it. I think there's like 200 figurines on top of it. This is a particular stone where they actually had kept creating on top of it. And that doesn't really fly in the understanding of how masonry is done, because when we think about stonework, it's a reductive process where you're chipping away at the stone and creating figurines. Well, this was additive. So these forms and creations were put on, and it was hardened. But once again, that's not a conventional understanding of how stonework works. So, but it does indicate geopolymer. So, and this is a pretty heavy stone, and once again, limestone, but there's no natural outcrops in that particular area. So how was this created? How was this material brought there? Lots of questions about how much of this is created, the stonework.
Yeah, gosh, there are just so many questions. I know some of the Spanish chroniclers claim that Incas said that the stonework was already there. I don't know that I've come across any chronicles that document observation of this massive construction. So, I mean, I don't know that there were any firsthand witnesses to the style of construction you're talking about, the Hanan or the massive stones of Sacsayhuaman. I don't know. I'm not aware of any European who ever actually saw that level or that scale of construction being accomplished.
There's a quote by Garcilaso de la Vega about Sacsayhuaman. And it's unclear if he actually witnessed this or he this is secondhand information that came to him, but he did say there were Inca constructions going on top of the Sacsayhuaman. But he also says, when he talks about like the 20,000 workers who came there to construct these constructions, that what was there beforehand was far grander than anything that the Incas were building at the time. So indicating that, these walls and that, massive complexes were pre-Inca. So yeah, so that's one. But as far as others, I don't. I haven't heard of any other chroniclers saying they've witnessed live, firsthand that these constructions were being built.
I just thought I'd finish with asking you about what we were talking about myths earlier. You've written about the predictions of mystics like Blavatsky and Edgar Cayce and others. Do you want to touch on how those have informed your understanding of these sites, or is that too big a topic maybe for another discussion?
Well, it is kind of a big topic, but I can touch on it a little bit. Blavatsky and Rudolf Steiner talk about a time where humanity is evolving over enormous time frames, millions of years ago. But they kind of it's not humans as we know them today, when we're talking about like the Polarians and the Hypogerians, I believe, and then the Lumerians were the third root race. This is where Blavatsky tends to think the stone walls that we see at Easter Island, we see at Sacsayhuaman, so the gigantic Cyclopean walls were created. She believes in about 18 million years ago, but how do you prove that? I don't know. We can't really carbon date the rock. Steiner does get into Lemurians and what they were constructing, and he said most of them tended to be cave dwellers, and they used to create like living dwellings, which would conform to the natural landscapes, but they lived underground. At a certain time in their evolution, they developed more artful work that put the fingerprint of human beings on the rock. And it was basically through the Lumerians. They had used what they call will and imagination to actually form and understand nature and create their constructions. We're talking about a time when these were probably the Lemurians were at a period where they were had plasticine bodies, and then they became more physical. I don't know how many millions of years that was, but I believe Rudolf Steiner said the first Lemurians were about 38 million years ago. But maybe some of your listeners would go, well, okay, that's a little extreme, but
Yeah,
maybe that
maybe.
was how humanity was developing,
So I guess the last question, so we can just wrap up, is just generally, you've been studying this intently, living there in Cusco for 5 years. How have your observations and discoveries and thinking around this and the people that you've met, how has this changed, or has it changed your beliefs about what it means to be, human? Who we are and why we're here. Has it changed any of those kind of philosophical or spiritual beliefs in you?
It's definitely made me think a little bit more about like how humanity evolved on this planet, and what kind of help did we have? I mean, were there other beings that might have been helping us along the way in our evolutionary process? There is the idea that the also the Anunnaki had at one time visited Earth, and they did hybrids, basically human hybrids. So maybe this gave us an evolutionary jump as far as our intellect. I mean, these are ideas I'm exploring because we just don't have that many answers to some of the mysteries that we're seeing around the world, the pyramids, what's going on energetically. It seemed like there was a time in our history where we had really advanced understanding of the earth, the energies of the earth, the telluric currents, and we seem to have lost that. So I'm hoping that we can find these archives of knowledge about how we evolved and why are we in the situation we are today. Are we in a good spot, or have we lost a lot of valuable information and technology that can really help us in the future for evolutionary purposes?
That's a really good explanation. There's so much to learn and we know so little. I don't know how anyone couldn't be really excited about this. And we didn't even get into what these sites might tell us about the future. There's a lot more talk, I feel like, about geomagnetic reversals and precessions and all the kinds of things that are happening today. But maybe we can shelve that for a future time. But certainly I think anybody who poo-poos these ideas, they can come visit Peru, they can come visit Cusco, maybe sign up for one of your tours and just get put their lay their eyes on the magnitude of some of the stonework and some of these sites. And I think you can't do that without some questionings or some questions beginning to form in your mind, like, does this really make sense with what we think we know? So do you want to just let listeners know where to find your book, and then maybe how they can find you or schedule a tour with you if they happen to be in Cusco?
Well, my book is on Amazon and any other major retailers. They can go to my website, sorcerersofstone.com. And so there's information about tours there. I have some articles which kind of talk about Hanampacha work, some of the things that we how they could possibly have been created, just some of the other theories that we didn't touch upon in today's interview for lack of time. So they can find more details of what will be in the book on my website. So sorcerersofstone.com.
Is that the
And
best way to find you if they happen to be in Cusco as well and want to schedule a tour?
absolutely. Because there's a contact form, of course, and there's a little bit about the tours. Mainly I'd take people for like half day tours up at Sacsayhuaman, but I also explore the sites of Napa Iglesia, Ollantaytambo, and Chinchero. So yeah, I'd love to have you come.
Well, this has been an absolute pleasure on my part. Thank you so much for joining me all the way from Cusco, Peru, and spending your time and sharing some of your wisdom. We just touched on a little bit, but listeners now know where to find you and get more if they're interested. So thank you very, very much.
And thank you, Andrew. It was a pleasure being on your program.